This is Diane Horn, your host on the sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters on KEXP Seattle 90.3 FM and online at kexp.org. Our guest this morning is Warren Karlenzig, Chief Strategy Officer for SustainLane, an online media company empowering people, businesses, and government to go green. Warren directs the SustainLane U.S. City Rankings, a peer-reviewed sustainability benchmarking of the largest 50 U.S. cities. He is author of the book, A Blueprint for Greening Affordable Housing, and co-authored San Francisco's Sustainability Plan, adopted by the city in 1997. Warren Karlenzig is here today to tell us about his most recent book, How Green is Your City?, which ranks the largest 50 U.S. cities for sustainability during 2006. Welcome, Warren.
Hi, Diane.
Would you like to begin by saying just a few words about SustainLane?
Sure. SustainLane, it's an online media company, as you mentioned, and we are trying to improve cities so that they go green faster and provide resources and tools and also metrics so they understand where they are, what the score is, where they need improvement, where they're doing well, and how they can learn from others. And we also have a site, sustainlane.com, for consumers to learn about green products and services and green businesses in their area, and it's the largest such site in the nation.
Why did you decide to measure the sustainability of cities? What is your goal?
Well, back when SustainLane was founded in 2004, James Elson, the founder of the company, and myself were talking about how there was a lot of interest in green cities and which ones were green and which ones weren't and why they were or why they weren't. And there seemed to be no real metrics as to how to measure that or in an objective way, really, to look at which city was doing better in certain categories and which ones were doing worse. So we wanted to kind of come up with the benchmark for that. And we spent about a year in development doing that and came out with the first scores in 2005. We ranked 25 cities. Seattle was amongst those. And then we expanded it to the largest 50 U.S. cities in 2006. And the book, How Green Is Your City, just came out this year, as you mentioned, with the complete scores and reports in all those cities.
What do you hope the rankings will accomplish?
Well, we hope to really push cities to do better. We hope that, you know, just in the corporate world, there's a lot of benchmarking always to look at how, especially in corporate social responsibility, there's ways that corporations can learn where they're falling behind, where they're doing well. And we wanted to do the same thing with cities for quality of life, for everything from air quality and tap water quality to local food availability to use of renewable energy and alternative fuel fleets and city management practices. We wanted to really come up with objective ways of measuring those, counting those, and providing examples for how cities can do that in a way that's quick and cost-efficient and really show leadership and innovation in those areas.
You've just alluded to the benchmarks that you use to do the rankings. Why did you choose this particular set of benchmarks to measure sustainability?
Well, first we wanted to look at what was available. We wanted to look at what data was available through the U.S. EPA, information on air quality or water quality, tap water quality. We wanted to look at information from the U.S. Green Building Council on a number of LEED buildings. There was a lot of existing data, and no one was really mining that to look at how cities were doing across these categories. We also wanted to survey the cities themselves and in areas where the data wasn't available, such as how much renewable energy each city uses, actually, or provides for its electricity, and how many alternative fuel vehicles they have. Do they have incentives for green building? Is there carpooling coordination? Is there collaboration with research universities and NGOs in these issues? And is there a sustainability plan and a department or a role to manage that within each city?
Would you say a few words about how you organized your ratings from sustainability leader to sustainability in danger?
Yeah, we took the largest 50 cities, as I mentioned, and we compared them against one another, which is called a relativity ranking. We're not saying that any city has to achieve this to be good or sustainable, because really there is no sustainable city, especially in the United States right now. There might be some small village in the world somewhere that is close to it, but definitely not in the United States. So what we wanted to do then was just provide a color coding or dashboard, if you will, so people could look and see air quality. You know, is my air quality good, relatively good, or is it in trouble? Good would be the dark green, you know, decent would be light green, marginal would be yellow, and danger would be orange, and totally at risk would be red, the red zone. And everyone seems to get those color metaphors for, traffic lights and just good to bad. So we use that color coding across many different areas and overall for how a city's doing.
For 2006, Portland received the highest sustainability rating compared to the other U.S. cities. What characteristics made Portland number one?
Well, Portland was consistently good across most of the areas we measured, and that's really what did it for Portland. They have excellent sustainability management, their Office of Sustainable Development. They have great air quality. They have great tap water quality. They have good solid waste diversion, which includes recycling. They have good city planning and land use, which includes a lot of park acreage within the city for people to use so they don't have to drive far away to recreate, and it also provides a better airshed. They have excellent city innovation in areas like green building. They have plentiful local food, farmers markets, community gardens. They have good city commuting, not great, but it's improving constantly. They also have great coordination between their suburbs and the inner city or central city area. The only downside of Portland and the measures that we used was housing affordability. That was 32 out of 50. They do have some natural disaster risk, 30 out of 50, which can affect sustainability. So we saw in New Orleans in terms of toxicity and pollutants if there's ever a great flood or earthquake or just access to natural resources that people need. So Portland does well across the board, and that's what gave it the number one score overall. But the most important thing is that people in Portland really seem to get it. We had no way of measuring that, but in going there, almost everyone we talked to on the street in interviews knew about sustainability and could relate it to their own life and to their business or just the way that they lived in the city. And that was extremely impressive and really haven't witnessed that in any other city we visited.
Columbus, Ohio received the lowest overall rating for sustainability. Why was Columbus, Ohio the least sustainable, according to your rankings?
Columbus was in the red zone across most areas. They really have very little public transit, almost next to none. I believe it's under 2% ridership versus a city like New York, which has 53% public transit ridership. They have poor air quality. Tap water quality is poor. They have not very much recycling. They have much sprawl around the city. There's really no density within the inner city, and the city has just chosen instead to radiate outward on the spokes of its freeway system, and that causes much sprawl, much pollution around the city, and much degradation of nice, rich agricultural land. So it's really the model of a sprawled Midwestern city, and there's a few others like that. Indianapolis is also another one, almost no public transit. They have very few green buildings, no sustainability department or management or plan. So those were some of the things that made Columbus number 50 on our list.
Could you give some additional examples of cities that are not sustainable?
Well, yeah, as I mentioned, though, no city in the U.S. is sustainable right now. Some are more sustainable. They're moving in that direction, but there's a long ways to go in sustainability. But cities like Detroit, there's really no interest whatsoever in this area. It's ironic that, this report and book we put out has been covered extensively in media, about 500 million media impressions in the last year. And Detroit was the only major media market in the nation that didn't cover it once, not in an alternative newspaper, not in a radio station. They really just don't care, it seems. I'm sure there are people in the community that do. But there's little acknowledgement of the issues that, renewable energy, innovation, green building, it's almost as if the automobile industry has a stranglehold on industry and ideas in Detroit, and it's kind of on a downward spiral. It's quite sad, actually. There are a few other cities like that, too. Oklahoma City, Oklahoma, extremely sprawled. Virginia Beach, Virginia, sprawled, and no public transit, no farmers markets. Even though there is great farmland around the city, there's just no acknowledgement that these things are important in the future of a city.
Looking on the more positive end, other cities like Portland, what are some examples of other cities that ranked relatively well?
Portland was number one, and San Francisco was number two. Seattle was number three, and they were clearly at the top of the pack. And statistically, they stood out. If you're looking at a bell curve, they were really the top of the bell. Chicago did quite well at number four, but in sort of a different pack, as well as Oakland, California at number five. New York City was number six, and Boston was number seven. So those were some of the top cities.
In looking overall at your rankings, what do you find the most striking about them?
Well, there's a lot of data and a lot of information, and if you put it all together, you get a good feeling for what a city's like. I like to go to all the cities in the top 10, and they weren't ranked in the top 10 because I like to go there, but it's interesting that the data about the cities, you know, do they have clean air? Do they have tap water that you could actually drink without filtering? Do they have a lot of parks? Do they have public transit? Do they have local food? Do they have people that are being innovative about improving the city? These are all things that speak to a good experience if you travel in a city or visit a city. It also speaks to a good experience for the residents. It's a higher quality of life. It's a reason to be proud of your city. And the cities in the bottom of the list are less likely good tourist or living destinations, at least in the perspective of people that care about these issues.
I'm Diane Horn, and we're speaking with Warren Kurlenzig, Chief Strategy Officer for Sustain Lane, and co-author of the book, How Green Is Your City?, which ranks the largest 50 U.S. cities for sustainability during 2006. Let's look in more detail at a few of the benchmark categories that you used in your rankings. One of the benchmark categories was city innovation. What types of innovations resulted in high marks for sustainability?
Well, we looked primarily at 6 different areas for city innovation, and we credited whether or not cities had programs in these areas. And those included environmentally preferable purchasing. So does a city purchase recycled items? Do they try to reduce the impacts of toxins in their purchasing? The others were green building incentives for commercial green buildings. Do cities actually provide money, zoning credits, things of that nature, more than just education and pamphlets? Do cities do the same for residential green building? Other categories included carpooling coordination. Do cities really try to advocate carpooling as a solution to congestion and to reduce carbon and pollution? Do cities have a car share program that they sponsor formally, or is there just a car share program in the city that's privately owned? And finally, the last category was clean tech incubation. Do cities work on incubating technologies that will increase economic development in areas such as green building materials, renewable energy, water treatment technologies, etc.? And are they trying to bake that into their economic development strategy with research universities and with city implementation of these new technologies so that these startups are getting a leg up and getting their products tested in a larger scale than just the small business or even garage they might be working in?
What contributed to a high score in your category on energy and climate change policy?
For that, we looked at the renewable energy provided out of the total energy for the city, and that wasn't just in city buildings, it was overall. We also looked at did the city have a greenhouse gas reduction goal, and did the city have a greenhouse gas inventory completed, and we gave slightly more credit or half more credit if they did within the past 5 years do an inventory. And finally, was the city just tracking greenhouse gas emissions as part of that's an inventory procedure?
And which cities scored at the top of that category?
Portland, Seattle, San Francisco were all high in that category. Those were the main ones. The California cities overall did well in that area. California really seems to be leading the way. Also, Los Angeles was number 4. Albuquerque, Chicago, and New York, Philadelphia, and San Diego were number 5 in that category.
Which characteristics contributed to a high score in the category of planning and land use?
For that, we looked at sprawl data, and that was provided out of an NGO called Smart Growth America's study of 2002, which they ranked sprawl in 100 U.S. cities, in the largest 100 U.S. cities. And they also looked at, was there mixed-use zoning, was there connectivity in the roads, you know, so that you weren't driving into cul-de-sacs in the suburbs constantly, and was there a good degree of density in cities. And besides that data, we also combined a look at park land per capita or per total acreage of a city, so that what percent of a city's land was devoted to parks. And that ranged, you know, from a low in some cities of 2% to a high of around 20% in San Francisco and New York.
And again, which cities were the best as far as planning and land use?
New York did well. Their zoning is excellent there. I mean, they have mixed-use zoning across the city. San Francisco is actually number 1, New York number 2, Boston number 3, Portland number 4, Albuquerque 5, El Paso 6. Seattle was down in that list at number 19, and Seattle's kind of right in the middle in terms of sprawl, according to the Smart Growth America study. So there's a lot of potential improvement for Seattle in that area. It might surprise Seattle listeners to know that Seattle sprawl is ranked worse than the sprawl around Los Angeles or in San Diego. They have greater density, actually.
What characteristics contribute to a high score in the area of city commuting?
City commuting looked at what mode of transportation people use to get to work, and that includes walking or bicycling and carpooling and taking public transit or driving alone, the bane of the American existence, which has been increasing the numbers of people driving alone on a steady basis. But some cities are showing a reversal of that trend where people are taking more public transit. And that is the case in Seattle, actually, where the people percentage taking public transit. The first year of this study was around 15% of city residents in Seattle took public transit to get to work. And that increased to almost 17% in the last year we looked at, which was 2005 data for our study last year. So Seattle's improving in that area. But one thing Seattle is decreasing in is the amount of people walking to work. I think it was roughly around 7% the first year we looked at Seattle. The next year it decreased to around 6%. So for some reason people are walking less to work. I don't know if that has to do with public planning or employment patterns. There are many factors that go into it. We also looked at cycling, as I mentioned, how many people take their bikes to get to work. And in the eastern cities it's relatively insignificant, but in Portland, it's approaching 3% now of people are taking their bicycles to get to work on a daily basis. Seattle is slightly above 2%, I believe, and that's extremely good, at 2.3%. That's one of the better scores in the nation. So Seattle has a lot to be proud of there, and it shows that actually cycling can be an option for people, as walking has been and should be.
Would you comment on the natural disaster category in your ratings?
For natural disaster risk, we came up with that as a criteria after the first year of the study, and in that year, San Francisco was rated number one, and we received a lot of feedback from people, mostly living in San Francisco, that said, how can a city be the most sustainable city in the nation when it has some of the highest housing prices? I can't afford to live here. I have to go live in the suburbs, or some people even call and said, I'm leaving the city because I can't afford it anymore. I'm a professional. And the other thing was natural disaster risk besides housing affordability that we added. And that looked at, if there's going to be a catastrophic earthquake in San Francisco or a catastrophic flood in New Orleans or a hurricane that takes out Miami, the environmental and sustainability implications are massive. You have to rebuild all the infrastructure, all that embodied energy is just really out the door, going to waste. You have potential contamination, pollution, which we've seen in New Orleans. The soil's contaminated greatly. Water's contaminated. If there's an earthquake on the West Coast, Seattle, for instance, where will the water come from? How will a city get its water? It might have to be trucked in. So there are many environmental implications of natural disaster risk. On the other hand, we did not want to rate that too heavily and put too much weight in that because it's one filter that people could look at in terms of sustainability, but not a major one. So we weighted it at a lesser degree than we did other categories.
Now let's focus on the sustainability rating for Seattle, which you rated number 3 out of the 50 cities that you examined. And you've been alluding to the results for Seattle, but in which categories did Seattle receive high sustainability rankings and why?
The city was excellent in maintaining a knowledge base, and that is tracking information about sustainability. It has excellent sustainability management programs. There's an office that tracks these things that develops policy about what the city should do in the future in these areas. The city has a strong green economy. It's looking at the sustainability market as being a great business opportunity and a regional economic development opportunity from everything, including green buildings, for which the city is one of the leading cities in the nation for, to local food, to clean technology incubation. So Seattle was extremely strong in all those areas. City innovation, they were number one in that area as well. They received really strong marks in everything from environmental preferable purchasing to green building incentives, both in commercial and residential markets, to carpooling coordination, to good car sharing, and the knowledge base area that I mentioned. There's a plan for sustainability, there's indicators, there's a department that tracks these things, and there's collaboration with research universities and with local NGOs.
In which categories did Seattle receive lower sustainability rankings?
Housing affordability, the city was number 40 in that category, 40 out of 50 of the largest U.S. cities. And housing affordability impacts sustainability in numerous ways. The chief way is people have to drive into the city to work there, but they can't afford to live there. And that has big impacts on traffic, on congestion, on the use of oil and fossil fuels for transportation, on sprawl, on development of open space around a city so that people could, you know, live in some affordable housing. And it means that people aren't able to contribute to the community in which they live as much if they're always commuting. So there are some secondary impacts to that as well. The other area in which Seattle ranked the sustainability challenge side is natural disaster risk. And that's primarily because of earthquake risk in the city. And that's just something that the city should, of course, it is aware of it, but come up with contingency plans, come up with ideas as to distributed energy being a source of energy in case there is a disaster, having water sources as close to home as possible, having local food, and having transportation options. You know, we just saw in Minneapolis that the bicycle actually was a great transportation option around the downtown area, and it still is in the wake of the bridge disaster there. So there are many ways in which the city can address having a high natural disaster risk, and also housing affordability. A city can do a lot to implement more affordable housing, to make sure it's part of planning and zoning, and to provide affordable housing as a sustainability element for environmental, economic, and social reasons.
Looking ahead, where do you think Seattle should put its efforts to move towards a more sustainable future?
Seattle, it's looking good in many areas. There's a lot of innovation with things like biodiesel in the fleets. The county is a real leader, King County, in sustainability. In fact, I would probably rank it as the top county nationwide in terms of sustainability innovation and management practices and information technology for tracking sustainability and having databases and things of that nature. So there's a lot of strength there. The city does need improvement in public transit, as most people in Seattle probably know. There's a lot of congestion. It's the 28th most congested city of the largest 50, which isn't terrible. But I think it's just going to get worse, and it seems to get worse every time I'm in Seattle. Ridership on public transit is, as I mentioned, about 17%. That's good, but not great. You know, cities like Boston and Washington and San Francisco are in the 30% range, and it's rising. Cities like New York is in the 53% range. So there is massive room for improvement there. And I know Seattle is looking at some, I believe, light rail initiatives. That really could make the city even more desirable in terms of tourism and in terms of business attraction. It seems that people that are looking to live, especially those in their 20s or 30s or 40s in other city areas, that's one of the first things they look at. Does the city have good public transit so they don't have to mess around with a car all the time or own a car even in some cases? And can they easily get to work? And is there, you know, a lot of mixed-use development where you have businesses and shops and homes and in a relative proximity? Seattle does lack a lot of mixed-use zoning. That was one of the weak points in the Smart Growth America study on sprawl in Seattle. That's something the city should be addressing, which I think it is with the concept called urban villages, a zoning concept to create cities within the cities, villages that have all the services that people need for work or for recreation or, you know, dry cleaners, et cetera, green dry cleaners, of course, so that they don't have to always get in their car or travel to the other side of the city for essential services.
What are your insights on the underlying reasons that cities tend to be more or less sustainable?
Well, I do think the political climate is a contributing factor. Almost all the dark green cities that we have in our study or that ranked well in our study are also relatively progressive. Portland, Seattle, San Francisco, New York City, Chicago, Boston, they're all relatively progressive. So there is an underlying political basis there. But then you have some cities that are really trying to put sustainability at the top of their planning for the future, and some of those are Republican-led cities with Republican mayors, and some of those are in the South. Austin, Texas is a progressive city, but it's in Texas, and it's one of the leaders in innovation in clean tech incubation. And another city is Charlotte, North Carolina, that's really trying to address its sprawl and its massive growth with infill development and public transit, and they're looking at renewable energy, and that is not in a Democratic-controlled area. Other cities would include Miami, which has really turned itself around the past year or two with some great sustainability planning. We'll see how they implement that. So it's really a trend that's spreading across the nation now. It used to just be in the northern states or the West Coast, and now we're seeing it spread to the Southeast very rapidly.
What effect have your rankings had so far? Have cities changed course or implemented new projects because of them?
Well, we've heard that Los Angeles has. It was interesting because it was a city official that was hesitant to complete our survey, and at the end of a conversation where I convinced them that we wanted to do this as objectively as possible, they said, well, you know, there are three major initiatives that the mayor instituted because of your study. Houston is another city that ranked very low the first year we put out the ranking in 2005. They ranked in the bottom, number 25. And as soon as we came out with that ranking, we got many calls from Houston. They developed an environmental coordinator, which they didn't have before that. And I think they saw that our inability to get anyone in the city that tracked this information was indicative of a problem. So they appointed an environmental coordinator that called us on his first day in the job and said, you know, if you need any information on our city or where we're going with all this, I'm here for you. So those are a couple examples. And I get calls from everyone from economic development directors to sustainability directors to planning managers to mayors themselves that are either pleased with our results or angry about them. So I know they're paying attention, and they're using this as a way to track their performance. So that's flattering, but it also puts a lot of pressure on us to do the right thing, be as objective as possible, get the best data, and to do it in the most complete, thorough, and accurate way, and to constantly improve what we're doing in terms of putting out a study. It can't just be something that stands still. And that's the interesting thing about sustainability, is that it's about continual improvement, really, and just preparing a better future and thinking about designing a better future at all times. Whereas the environmental movement was about, you know, correcting the sins of the past more and redressing those sins, the sustainability movement's about just constantly creating a new future every day.
Well, what's the message you'd like to leave our listeners with?
Well, these are exciting times in this area, and I think that Seattle is a city that should be very proud of what it has accomplished, but that people should realize this is just the very beginning, and the possibilities for job creation in clean technology industries. I know Seattle has a lot of activity going on in biodiesel development, and there could be advanced transportation development. Boeing is there, engineering expertise. There are a lot of options in transportation and green building. It's one of the fastest growing segments in all American industry, and Seattle's a leader there too. So Seattle should capitalize on those things and make itself a center of economic development for some of these new growth industries, and really set the tone for the world if it can.
Well, thanks so much for being here, Warren.
Thank you very much. I really enjoyed the show.
We have just been speaking with Warren Kurlenzig, Chief Strategy Officer for SustainLane and co-author of the book, How Green Is Your City?, published in 2007 by New Society Publishers. For more information, check on the web at www.howgreenisyourcity.com. Again, that's howgreenisyourcity.com. Warren Kurlenzig will be in Seattle on Wednesday, September 12th, as part of an urban sustainability forum sponsored by the City of Seattle on How Green Is Our City? He will be joined by Ellen Durning of the Sightline Institute. The September 12th event will take place from 5:30 to 7 p.m. at Seattle City Hall, 404th Avenue in the Bertha Landis Room, and is free and open to the public. I'm Diane Horn. Thanks for listening, and be sure to tune in to the sustainability segment again next week.